Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. For this week's episode, we spoke to World Championship semi-finalist over 800 metres, Max Bergen. Enjoy. Okay, first off, Max, just welcome to the podcast. It's great to finally get you on. I mean, Matt and I have been talking about it for a few years now, but it seems like pretty good timing. How are you, first of all?
I'm all right, thanks. Sort of moving into my off-season now after World Champs. Bit disappointed with the lost race, but I think as a season overall, it's a step forward from the previous one. And like given the circumstances of this season, I think I've got to take it.
Mate, how come, what class is it, is a step forward? Is it, you know, the fact that you're able to go there and actually compete your world to gain that experience?
Yeah, actually, setting foot on the start line this time is a bit of a moving on from last year, you know. And like also, I suppose, being able to race a little bit more consistently. I mean, I wasn't able to start the season early, I think, unlike last year, but I didn't have a season-ending injury for the first time in quite a few years. So, yeah, happy with that.
Awesome, man. Talk about that world semi-final a little bit. Heats was good, qualified through, but talk about the semi, how it went for you.
Well, I mean, I had the idea of, you know, if I can make the... I was the last semi. So, you know, the fastest losers spots were open. You know, we're up for grabs. So I had the idea that if I make it fast enough, if I run fast enough, I can make it into like top four qualifiers rather than top two. And that'd be easier for me. So I set off with that intention. And then I got to 600 and my hammies just locked up. I thought I would have more than I did. And I think that is that sort of like hitting a wall there, I think is more a result of sort of a buildup of like mistraining. I think it was finally starting to bite at that point in the season. Like I say, I think if all things had gone well, you know, that I'd be able to handle that pace. But on the day, I just couldn't. I think that's a sign that, yeah, I needed to sort of stop there and work on this Achilles issue that's been limiting me.
Yeah. And can you talk about that Achilles issue a bit, Max? Because obviously I'm sure we'll get into how it's kind of gone through the years. But recently, like what happened sort of after British Champs this year, kind of going into Worlds?
Yeah, well, it's been an annoying one, this Achilles. It's been lingering around since December. I thought I had an issue with it all the way back then. I thought it was my shoes initially, but I've had tests on that and sort of shows that it's not that. So I'm still not entirely sure what's causing it. But essentially, it's just inflammation in the sort of upper tendon region on my left and my right, which has like steadily gotten worse. I was managing it up until the end of April. I had a really good training camp in Poch this year. And then I had just started to sort of like tone training down a bit after that, because it was just getting too sore, basically. And then from there, it just got even worse. It started limiting training. Like I had to stop a lot of all my steady running, basically, because that was aggravating it more. I was really struggling to like get up to speed on the track. So the period from like May to the end of June was just like running about two track sessions a week and not really finishing them either. And like just relying on cross training and aqua jogging and stuff with no impact. And then at the end of June, I had some injections for it, which solved it sort of like for, you know, a few weeks, got rid of the pain. That was around the time of British Champs. So British Champs, like, I'd missed a load of training and, I, you know, that was my first race of the season, but there was no pain, which was good. And then it sort of started creeping back up again to around London. I ran with strapping on in London, but it wasn't too bad. Like it, I could still warm it up. And then from there, it just got worse and worse again. So yeah, it's sort of been the story of my season, really, just dealing with that and managing it.
It's frustrating for you. How do you mentally, how do you cope with that? You know, if you've got a support team in place, like mentally, what's your, after London, come off quite a big high, but in the back of your mind, you know, things are getting a little bit worse going into Worlds. Kind of what's going through your head at that point?
Well, I think that the results, particularly at London, and also the you know, the bronze at British Champs, I think were massive motivating factors for me. Because like, at the start of the season, you know, in sort of May time, I really was probably at my lowest motivation ever, really, because it's coming into like the fourth or fifth season where I've had some sort of problem. You know, it was getting to me a lot. So yeah, it was a bit of a challenge this year, but just those few results, you know, that I managed to get in July and August time were enough to pick me back up again. And I'd say now, even with a bit of a disappointing semi at World Champs, I'd say I am probably more motivated than I have been for like a good few years now. Like even at the end of last year, I didn't feel how I feel now. So I suppose, you know, wow, that's been a positive out of this season.
Yeah, now that's great to hear, because obviously, yeah, it might be disappointing, but you're a 143 guy, you're a world semi-finalist, and it's not a bad way to finish a season, is it? Max, let's rewind, because I'm sure we'll get into kind of the future and stuff later on, but can you just actually chat to us about how you got into the sport in the first place?
Yeah, of course. A long time ago now. I did a lot of the school cross countries in primary school. So when I was about 8 or 9 or something, so that was my sort of first exposure to it. And then off the back of that, I went down my local club because my granddad was the coach. So like, it was just an easy in, you know, my parents made me do a sport and that was the obvious one to do because of the family connection. So yeah, I went down at the club like just once a week between the ages of like 8 and then to 11. And then I stopped for a bit because I was, when I was growing, like going through a growth spurt, I was absolutely awful. I had no coordination. I was just not very good at running. But then sort of towards the start of secondary school, again, through doing the schools cross countries, I picked it back up again. I went down the club again at like 13, I think. I started competing on the track at 800 because that's what my dad had done when he was younger. And I got immediate success with it, so I just sort of stuck with that distance.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did you commit to the 800? But
yeah, pretty much straight away. Yeah, because I've never really deviated much from it. I've done a few 15s here and there. I've always wanted to do a 4, but never managed. Never, you know, got around to doing it. Just more or less purely been an 8 man.
What do you love about the 8?
Not much. It's bloody difficult. I feel like it fits my talent, I suppose. I think I work best off of like performing at like high lactic, not lactic threshold, sort of in lactic, but I don't have the speed really for a 400. So it's just like speed endurance. I think that's what I'm trying to think of. But yeah, that sort of niche, it just suits me.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, they did give you a 400 split in Budapest, I think, in the semi-final. I don't know if you've seen that on your Power 10, but what do you reckon you could do for a 400 when we talk about that kind of raw speed?
I'd like to think I could at least do a 47, maybe 46. But it'd be tough, though, because, I mean, I've never used blocks.
Which is crazy
to
me.
I'd probably start it, so that might actually take a bit off the time.
It's crazy because you strike... I think everyone looking in assumes you're just super quick because you're happy to take out that first lap really hard.
Well, I think 49 pace, you know, is a bit, it's a big difference between that and like a 46 or a 47, isn't it? Like, I don't necessarily need the acceleration for that. I think that's what would limit me in a 4, the acceleration phase, because I've got a big stride length in it. You know, I might not be able to get up to speed like fast enough, but you never know. I mean, one day maybe I'll try it.
Yeah, Max, you mentioned obviously you started racing on the track and it was the 800 from day one. Did your training reflect that? Were you always kind of training specifically for an 800, or were you doing sort of general middle distance training, but it just came to be that you raced 800s?
Well, when I was younger, definitely the training was very general. I think that it's the same with most like athletes before like a certain age. Before 14 or 15, you know, you don't really specialize. You just sort of do a general setup with a group of all the kids at the club. But then after that, yeah, definitely move towards, you know, targeted in 800 training, especially when my dad took over my coaching, because then we started training on my own, doing my own sessions, completely focused on 8 running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so any training
when did that happen? When was that transition, I guess, between your granddad?
I think that was about 2017, 2018, sort of like, when I was just sort of moving into, you know, challenging for like GB junior teams and stuff like that. So a long time ago now.
Yeah. And your dad's still coaching you?
Yeah.
Do you have any training partners even today? I know you go on a few altitude camps through the winter, but when you're back home?
Yeah, no, I don't really have any training partners. No, I mean, I go like long runs and stuff with the athletes in Leeds sometimes, because that's where I'm based most of the year. And then, you know, the occasional grass session I'll join in on, but mainly I would say I train on my own. Like all my track sessions are on my own. It's just this sort of like additional stuff that if there is someone about, I'll do it with.
This is like Peter and Seb Co-style.
Is it? I don't really know. I haven't read the books. I don't know what their training was like.
No, fair enough, man. It's exciting. I assume you just enjoy that. You know, that's where you thrive. And that's how you cope best, is just kind of these individual sessions and kind of grinding out on your own. Is that why I presume you're so comfortable front running as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've done it so long, it feels like it's sort of all I've known training wise. There was a period like when I was really young where I did training groups, but it's been so long now, I've almost forgotten it. And I think, yeah, I think you're right. It does play into why it feels so comfortable to front run. It's just because that's what I'm used to in training. Not having anyone like around me, breathing down my neck, and not having anyone in front to chase, just sort of having the clear track ahead. But I think also that is something hopefully that, you know, I can address in future. It is great being a front runner, but you can't rely on that all the time. And I definitely do at some point need to start developing my tactics a bit and mixing things up.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I think we were looking, and I think you would have been about 10 years old when Rhodesia won in 2012. Obviously someone so famous for front running. So yeah, I wonder if it's something that you'd think about carrying on doing, just kind of enhancing that, but you're kind of suggesting that you want to kind of work on other aspects as well.
Well, I think being the key word, I mean, I definitely want to keep up, you know, front running, especially for times, because I think that is just the easiest way to do it. I think the fact that the world record was run in such a way, it surely is proof enough of that tactics viability. But I think certainly for like heats and semis in a world champs, and for, you know, those sorts of more tactical races in general, it's definitely, you need to have all the tools in your toolbox. I mean, this year, I don't think I really had much of a choice. I had the three races, two of which I needed the time for, so hence I needed to go for it in them. And then in the world heats and world semis, like, is that the time to be starting experimenting with tactics? I didn't think so at the time. But in an ideal season where I run 9, 10, 11 races, hopefully a few of those can be ones where I mix things up a bit and I, you know, I try new stuff and develop new tactics.
Well, this is the crazy thing I was going to ask you is, you know, you have almost made a name for yourself coming out so fast. Like, you can run, and what did you run last year? 143.5 off, you know, first race out, you know, just incredible. And Is there a reason why you're so good at, you know, attacking that first race, or would we see even more kind of 7, 8, 9 races into the season? Because typically with an 800, you need a few races to kind of get to your best. So is there, was there kind of more to come last year? Or do you think that first race?
I'd definitely like to think if I could get up to 8, 9 races a season, I would be going faster by the end. I do feel like despite running these times, I haven't been able to show what I can do fully fit because I haven't reached full fitness for so long. I mean, and obviously, I can't deny that, you know, I've had a lot of injury problems, and maybe that is an indicator that I will never reach that peak fitness, but I'd like to think I would. So I think in an ideal season, after a few races, I would be running, you know, at least a second quicker than what I started on.
Yeah, Max, obviously we've got to ask around those injuries, but where do you think they kind of come from, and what are you currently doing to kind of analyze kind of where they come from and how to counteract them, I guess?
It's a tricky one because I suppose over the past sort of 4 or 5 years, I've had very like different, seemingly unrelated injuries. In 2019, 2020 time, I had problems with my hamstrings and my adductors, which probably came from a weakness in the glutes and the hamstrings, which then got addressed with S&C for a long time. In 2021, I think I severed a hamstring. I got a 60% tear in a hamstring tendon, which is probably a continuation of the same thing. But it did seem to come out of like the fact that I don't know. It was a lingering issue that wasn't really undiagnosed for a bit because symptomatically it wasn't really showing much right up until where it went, and then obviously it was a problem. 2022 last year, I wasn't really injured. I got a DVT on the way to the Worlds, and that was, it's not really, I wouldn't count that as an injury. That's just bad luck. And not knowing that I had a genetic predisposition to it. Like, I think it's decided now that I probably got it on the flight over. And then the symptoms took a while to present. I thought it was calf tightness at first. And then the day of the heat at Worlds, it was like, so painful to stand on. It felt like it was cramping up, and I had to pull out. I was distraught last year, but looking back on it, like at least that season, you know, I didn't get injured. This year, it's been a problem with the Achilles, so obviously the complete other end of the leg to the areas which I used to get problems with. And like I said, we still haven't nailed down the cause of it, which is annoying, but at least I've got time now to investigate it, and I suppose that like there's no pressure to get back racing, which I think was a bit of an issue earlier in the season, because like there wouldn't be any time where we could just like stop everything and just investigate what was wrong and like go to the gym 4 times a week to rehab it if needed. There was always the pressure of the season kind of looming and needing to get training in and just sort of managing it as best as we could. So this season, I suppose, has been in a way maybe less serious than the previous years. So it's going in the right direction.
Wait, what's, did you say a DVT?
Yeah, a deep vein thrombosis, blood clot in my calf. That's what I had last year.
Wow.
I mean, you don't really hear of it much in young people. Like, it's definitely something you get, you know, like you hear more in like 70-year-olds and stuff like that. So it's a bit worrying to have got one, but yeah, I found out afterwards through blood tests that I've inherited like a condition from my mum. I can't remember, factor 5 Leiden or something, and it makes your blood clot easier. So yeah, I have to take blood thinners for flights now just in case it clots up again, and that should prevent it. So hopefully it will never be an issue again. It's just bad luck that it happened then.
So this was very serious. Did you, you know, and obviously you didn't compete the back end of last year. How long did that take to kind of get over?
Well, the pain symptoms were gone in about like 3 weeks of taking the blood thinners.
Right.
But there was a period of about like 2 months afterwards where I was advised like not to get my heart rate up, because the main sort of danger with DVTs, with blood clots, is if the blood clot moves to your heart, it becomes something called a pulmonary embolism, and that can stop your heart and that can kill you. So I was advised to just like not do much at all intensive exercise for like a period of about 10 weeks after I'd had the DVT. So that took a big chunk out of training, really. And that might have had a knock-on effect on this year, because like having a long period out of exercise might have weakened the body a bit, and then that weakness then has led on to the Achilles issues. So yeah, it was a bit of an annoying one, really.
Yeah,
you obviously kind of mentioned that most of the time in training is yourself and your dad, just the two of you, but let's talk about the wider team, because obviously when things like this are going on, how important is it to have kind of the likes of Nike, British Athletics, etc., working around you to kind of get to the bottom of some of these issues?
Oh, massively important. Like, if I'd have got these, well, particularly that DVT issue, if I'd have got that, you know, without medical backup, and you know, I might not have known what it was, and you know, it could have been a lot more serious than it was. I mean, if it had developed onto like a pulmonary embolism, that could have been potentially, you know, very serious. So I was lucky, certainly in that sense, that I was with the British team, that they took me to a doctor straight away. They analysed the report, the scan very well, because the thing about DVTs is that they don't necessarily get picked up by MRI scans, which is what I had, because we were working on the assumption that it was a calf injury, despite the fact that I didn't know how I could have caused one. But then they sent the scan off. I think it was James Brown, the BA doctor, looked at it and thought, well, that looks a bit, you know, a bit unusual, the sort of pattern of inflammation. They sent it off to a hematologist in London, and then it got flagged as something that, you know, potentially DVT, not a calf injury like we initially thought. So in that instance, it was very important to like have that backup, because if I'd have just continued on the assumption that it was a calf injury and like got my heart rate up and just kept training, then that clot could have moved and it could have been very serious. And then in general, like this year as well, with this Achilles injury, it's been invaluable having the support of Nike, because like they paid for me to go see a specialist in like June, July time. That's how I got those injections, and that's, I suppose, how I managed to have a season, because without those injections, I don't think I would have made it through trials, really. And again, like, now that season's ended, they're working to support me as well. I've done shoe testing in London to establish whether it's the shoes causing things, and then they've also like said that anything I need, they can offer help for. So definitely very helpful.
Mate, I want to talk about Eugene a little bit, because obviously that was quite a big moment. And you mentioned his short, but you know, earlier on you said actually this May was the kind of lowest low. So let's talk about, you know, the highs and lows. And Eugene, initially when the news breaks, did you just want to get the hell out of there? Did you enjoy the champs? Can you watch running when you're injured? Are you one of those people who just wants to distance yourself from it? How do you cope?
Eugene was a weird one. I was absolutely distraught to start with when I first pulled out, because you know, I'd missed my chance. I was world lead at Eugene, and I didn't even make the start line for the heats. A few days afterwards, when it was diagnosed as a DVT, initially that cheered me up a bit, even though it was, you know, a pretty serious issue, just because it meant that it wasn't an injury. You know, it was a health problem. It wasn't my fault, I suppose, and also because I think initially, like, people were very optimistic about me maybe being able to run later in the season. So I thought, oh, you know, it'd be sorted in a week. I might be able to make commies. I might be able to make Europeans. But then I started getting, you know, I started talking to the doctors more and more, and it like kind of became more and more obvious that I wouldn't be having a season. Then it sort of set in, you know, oh, I've missed another season. I also had to stay in Eugene an extra 10 days. I couldn't fly back with the rest of the team because I couldn't, you know, until the blood clot died down, I couldn't travel. So I ended up spending a week in Portland, where Nike looked after me, which was actually quite nice. You know, I was a bit miserable, obviously, still with the champs fresh in my mind, and my leg was still hurting. But I think of all the places to get stranded, Portland was probably one of the best because, yeah, I did have a good week being looked after by the Nike guys. I went to Nike HQ. I had a nice like sort of tour of all the facilities and all like the testing stuff. I got a load of free kit. I went paddleboarding on one of the lakes with one of the guys and went to a pub quiz at one point. So I actually had a really good week. I got the worst fish and chips I've ever had in this this bloody like food market kind of place right next to my hotel. I just wandered down one day, and there's this Scottish bloke with this like camper van set up, and he's selling fish and chips. He's absolutely ripping off these poor Americans because he's got like a slab of cod just deep frying it, and oh, it was absolutely vile, and he was selling it for about $14. It really, wow. Yeah, it stuck in my mind that it's yeah, just funny.
Well, this is interesting. We get a bit of an insight into what you enjoy perhaps outside of running, because you know, can be quite a closed off character, I think. So do you have any other hobbies outside of the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy hiking, but I haven't been able to do that for the past year because, you know, this Achilles issue, because that flares it up. So I think that maybe that was contributing to why I was so miserable in May, because it was just sort of like stopping me doing my other things as well. I couldn't go hiking, I couldn't really go like long drives or anything like that. As for other things, I spend far too much time on computer. You know, video games, yeah, it's probably a bit of a problem for me. I used to absolutely bash Football Manager, but luckily I'm reformed now. I haven't bought the last two games that they've released. I've recovered from that.
So one thing I want to talk about is obviously your huge success as a youngster that built, put quite a lot of pressure on yourself, or maybe it didn't, but from the outside, I think everyone has high expectations for you. And you kind of signed professional. How did you cope with, are you enrolled at a university, I must ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go to Uni of Leeds.
Okay. Nice. And finishing school, how did you cope with kind of basically turning professional as soon as you finished school, which is quite an early age, especially in this country? We don't often hear of that.
Yeah. Well, the first year I was professional, COVID happened. So like straight away, that first year wasn't very like, there wasn't much pressure on because there was barely any races. There was a world champs in like the September or something, but I don't think there wasn't really much pressure for me to like get to it that first year, just because of like how disrupted the season had been. I'd say I'm starting to feel the pressure more now than I was when I first signed. Like things were looking a lot more up a few years ago than they were now. I mean, after like 3 years now, I've had like a lot of injuries, I suppose, now. So I definitely say the pressures are more.
Yeah, and let's chat about some of your training, Max, because we've kind of mentioned throughout this podcast, we don't see you in that many races. So what are you actually doing behind the scenes that means you can come out and run these crazy times? Like, how does it differentiate from winter to summer and things like that? What's a typical week look like?
A typical week, I suppose, is when, you know, when I am fully fit and I can actually train. In the summer, it'd be like three track sessions and then a hill session in there as well, long run, gym once a week, and something else probably as well. Unfortunately, like, it hasn't been that like standardized for this season, so it's been a bit disrupted. In the winter, I do try and do a lot more mileage. I try and do, you know, grass sessions, longer runs, less track sessions, less speed-oriented track sessions as well, up the reps, up the recovery. There's just sort of usual 800-meter thing, I think. I don't think my training, to be fair, is particularly unique. I think the reason that I'm able to come out and run these fast times off the go, you know, like first race out, it's just because I've learned that, you know, that to take my chances when I'm presented with them. Like, I go onto the track thinking, oh, this could be my last race of the season here, because, like, more often than not, it is. So I have to seize it when I have it. And first race of the season is always usually important as well, because I never have the qualifying time from the previous year, because I've never bloody run far enough into the season to get it. So I do need, like, usually a qualifying time for a championships early in the season. So I just go into the first race of the season thinking, right, we'll get that ticked off the, you know, off the list. Done straight away. I just go for it front running and usually come away with the fast time.
Is it nice for you as well, thinking that, I guess, you're not too worried about, like, getting into quick races and things like that? I know obviously you can, but with yourself wanting to front run, as long as the weather's pretty good and it's a decent enough track, you can go and do it pretty much anywhere. Like, you can do a BMC, for example.
Yeah, I think it's very useful having that. I mean, I like to think that I could turn up at the Yorkshire Championships in May and run them, you know, 1:44 and put myself in the ring. I think that's, like, one of my unique, I suppose, skills. But I think also, I do think other people are kind of cottoning onto the fact that just for purely getting a time, front running, or at least, like, sitting behind a pacemaker, you know, in like a paced race, and then just leading from the front is actually the most effective way of, like, guaranteeing yourself a time. So I think hopefully, you know, maybe we'll start seeing more people doing that.
Yeah, just, I've always thought that, you know, just having a smooth run in an 800 must be massive.
Yeah, not running, you know, running the shortest distance, not having to cut around the, you know, go wide around the corners, rather, not getting chopped up, not getting the risk of, you know, getting pushed or anything like that, which always is a big risk in 800. Being at the front is the safest place to be. And if you want to run a time, you might as well time trial it. That's always my thinking anyway.
Do you look at World 800 running right now? Like, obviously, we would have watched the final at Worlds, and is there an opportunity right now? Is it a little bit weaker than other events?
I can see why people think that, because of the because we're not near the world, none of us are running near the world record at the moment. But I wouldn't say it's weak. No, I think there's a big depth in competition. I just think the top end times aren't there yet. But I think definitely in the next few years we'll start seeing 142s again. Maybe 141s, you never know. And hopefully, you know, I can be in that mix. If nothing else, I can run the times. Maybe I can't race, but yeah.
Well, you know, you are a national record holder at what, under 15, under 17, under 20, and the only record left for you is Sebco's national record of 141.
Yeah, it seems a long way off, but, you know, it's good having a target.
What motivates you more, times or medals?
I would have said times before this year, but I think seeing, like, going to the World Champs, like, properly this time and actually competing, and, like, and also seeing Ben win bronze as well, and, like, and thinking, actually, no, that's where it's at, really, isn't it? I mean, times are all well and good, but it's racing that gets you to, like, the respect, and it's the and it's the medals you can keep at the end of the day. So I would say, I think from now on, medals definitely more motivating than times.
Yeah. So that's the motivation, but you mentioned to us at the start you're on your off season right now. What's the kind of winter going to look like, and then going into next year, what are the goals?
Well, currently I'm waiting to, like, speak to some doctors and physios and stuff, and, like, work out what is causing this Achilles issue. And then as soon as I've got some sort of, like, concrete diagnosis, I'm going to go and, like, stay in the gym, like, 4 times a week, maybe focus on getting that sorted, like, do whatever strengthening I need to do, get it out of the way, like, done now, and then build up some mileage, maybe do a few cross countries, maybe that short course at Liverpool. Though, I mean, cross countries are never my priority. Like, I really struggle to run in mud. I don't know if it's something about my style, but I just think it's just horrible. I hate it. So do a bit of that, slog through that in the winter. And then maybe next year indoors is a possibility. I mean, I'd love to race indoors. It's another chance at championships, I think, next year. and also to get more racing experience. Like, you know, the one thing I think I am missing at the moment is races. So doing the indoor season, adding, you know, like 4 or 5 races onto what I do in the track season, I think is, it just makes sense. I think obviously I'll have to see how I'm doing coming into that sort of like February period, whether I'm up for running at that point, but I'd like to think now, you know, at the moment, I'd want to do them.
Is there a reason you haven't in the past? Is it just been injuries at that point and not quite in shape?
Not in track shape. Like, I think a few of the previous sort of winters have been like very mileage focused, very like sloggy, and I just haven't been up to speed whatsoever. So it just hasn't made sense to do an indoor season. Also, because of the injury risk. I mean, even this year, like, I've had a few people say to me, you know, do you want to risk doing indoors? Because obviously I have an Achilles problem right now, and indoors is not good for Achilles. So it'll have to be if I'm, you know, fit for it, and if I'm in good shape for it. But I just think at the moment, I think getting the experience in is probably more of a priority than it's ever been before. So I think, you know, I just have to risk it.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to see you at that Liverpool short course, mate. Obviously, we saw you at Mansfield last year. I take it you didn't enjoy Mansfield last year too much.
No, actually, Mansfield wasn't too bad, mainly because there was no pressure on. I was in the B team for Halifax, actually. I wasn't even in the A team. So, you know, I just sort of set off just for a bit of a run around and a bit of a fast finish. I didn't enjoy Mansfield last year. Maybe I can do that one again this year. I wouldn't mind that. It'd be better than like a normal cross country, like a West Yorkshire League or something. Those are, and because I think, you know, like running the senior distances now as well, I don't fancy that.
No. Do you get a few people looking to take some scalps? Do you think people are like, they recognise you like during the race and they think, oh,
I think you're doing cross country, yeah. But I mean, I just think that there's not much value in my scalp over cross country. I think it's been well and truly run ragged over the years. I think most of the country's probably beaten me at some point over cross country. Certainly in the junior years, I was finishing in the hundreds in the nationals pretty consistently.
But you know, I guess, was it a staple part of your winter?
It was. Like, yeah,
almost need to go and back to those routes.
Yeah, even though the races never were much to look at, like the actual training, the aerobic base, I think is very important, and I think that's what I've missed out on this year. You know, where I was speaking about the world champs earlier and missing the training and that being a reason as to why I just couldn't handle the second round. I think that's probably a bit, you know, like that aerobic aspect of it is important as well. So like, get that in the winter.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, Max. We look forward to kind of hopefully seeing you on the cross country this winter and wish you all the best.
Cheers.
Yeah, thanks for chatting to us.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me on.